Hello and welcome to the Industry Leaders Podcast, where we talk to the leaders of some of the most exciting retail and direct brands and learn the real stories behind their success, their challenges and their plans for the future. I'm Sarah Cole Boyle and this podcast is brought to you by More2, the marketing science people. On the podcast with me today is Claire Watkin. She's Managing Director of Trendsetter and The Fine Bedding Company, which is a fourth generation family business, which she joined at 22 and took over at the tender age of just 29. Now, I love hearing about family businesses, so I've been really looking forward to speaking with you, Claire. Could you just tell us a little bit about the business? You know, who set it up? What do you do? How did you get involved? What's the story?
Well, originally, my great-grandfather set up the business back in 1912, and we were a business producing mattresses and pillows for the ship liners going from Liverpool to America. So obviously, that's a long time ago. More recent history is that my dad bought out the bit that was making the mess, which I think was feathers flying everywhere, and they were due to close that down. So my dad came along and said, right, you know, I think I can do something with this. And then Trendsetter was born back in the 1970s. And so he's a bit of a sort of machine developer, entrepreneur, developing new bedding all the time. And it's very much in his blood about innovation. And so we produced machinery that produced new duvets and pillows, and they were kind of an up and coming thing back then. And more recently, the positioning's very much been about that kind of premium bedding, you know, focusing on all the attributes for a really good night's sleep, which so much of us love, want, and sometimes don't always get.
Yes, absolutely. So tell me, who else in your family is involved? Do you have brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles in it?
Well, there's no aunts and uncles, just my dad he's chairman, now age 79, still as switched on as ever, you know, for any calls, but mainly retired. And then my brother-in-law is involved as sales director. He looks after all of our independent customers. And apart from that, there's not so much sort of family interaction. Although I do have four sisters who are a little bit more involved now as we sort of moved to sort of focus on the next generation.
Mm. And one question that I always find quite interesting about family businesses, obviously, aside from the legacy, but how do you separate family relationships from business relationships?
As you pointed out, I've sort of been doing this since I was 22. So 22 years later, you sort of find your ways of working together. So there's moments when there's a lot of chat about the business. You know, dinner time has always been a time where, you know, chat about business is banned, which is very sensible, I think. And, you know, I have my times when I sort of phone my dad to give him an update. And so you kind of find this natural rhythm. And then there might be a time where actually there's more for you to discuss, sort of ups and downs. Obviously, we've been through quite a few over the last 3 years. And those times, you know, you're talking about much more and more regularly. But yeah, I think you have to find that balance. Otherwise, the rest of the family can be bored stiff or rather frustrated. Yeah. But I think, you know, there's a genuine interest from all our family of what we do. And I think with social media now, you know, they're all watching as much as anything, every post we make, and they're so enthused about the products, you know, and talking to their friends about it. You know, who doesn't like to talk about sleep and getting more of it?
Yeah, for sure. Because my dad is actually self-employed as well. So, you know, kind of family business was all very much part of our lives as well. Although we were less good at spanning at the dinner table. It always seemed to kind of come into a dinner table chat. It is funny when you kind of get everybody's quite very, you know, very emotionally invested and very, you know, so much of your family life revolves around this business. You know, when things are good, it's great. But when things are not so good, it's difficult, you know, because you can it's hard to switch off sometimes.
Oh, really hard to switch off. But actually, you know, I find that with a lot of the people that work with us as well. And you know yourself, you've got to get this balance of family and business, and that you can't, you know, let work dominate your life. You've got to have a balance. But I get even more worried when I see it in our employees, and you think, hang on a minute, you've been working this weekend, and I can see, you know, from emails, etc. And you think, this isn't, you know, you've got it. Yeah. You've got to work with everybody. You know, it's not necessarily just the family business. But I think it's very difficult for anyone to sort of completely switch off, or maybe I sort of just don't know how to, from, you know, what dominates your kind of working life. And, you know, we do it because, you know, in essence, we hope to enjoy it. That's the principle, you know, that I kind of think is really important. You've got to enjoy what you're doing. So it is difficult to walk away from it at the end of the day. And, you know, dog walks are good for sort of clearing the mind.
Yes, and the soul.
Absolutely.
And tell me, did you feel a pressure to join the family business? Was it always the plan, or did you kind of fall into it?
So it's funny because around 16, which is actually when my dad joined the business, he left school at 16 and dad started to talk to me about joining the family business, 15, 16 year old. Obviously teenage, there's no way I would do anything that my dad suggested. And so I was sort of science background. And so with a careers sort of advice was like, oh, science, medicine makes sense. So I sort of pursued that with work experience and sort of put my application in. And my first interview day, I realized that I really didn't want to work in a hospital, though I loved working with people. So that really kind of changed direction. I ended up going to university and doing something I was really passionate about. Someone said, if you want to do something, do it that you're passionate about. And that was biology with ecology and zoology. And it's really weird that years later that sort of come back into my life with the environmental focus, which I'm really, really happy about. But no, after that, you know, I went on, I did a master's in marketing, I did some market research, and we were just setting up the factory in Estonia. And my dad said, well, why don't you go and have a look at it? He sort of sprung this opportunity. And so I did. And, you know, I was so fascinated by traveling. I did a lot of traveling around that age. And, you know, I joined as a sort of development manager that was going out to, you know, factories overseas, seeing the setup of our factory in Estonia. And so it really went from there, but you kind of, you don't really think about it. And then sort of all these years later, you're like, I'm still here. And so are a lot of other people, which is great. Yeah.
And actually, speaking of Estonia, I think you went out and you brought your family out to Estonia, didn't you?
Yeah. So just after my son was born, he was 6 months old. So I had a bit of time off. You never have quite as much as you would like, perhaps. And we had a change of director over there. And I went not to run it because that would have been a disaster because my brain is sort of not wired to processes and doing things in a linear way. So it would have been chaos if I was in charge. But we had someone out there. My husband was actually working as an engineer, developing some new machinery for us. So he was traveling out anyway. And so we thought it was an ideal opportunity to experience living in Estonia because I suppose at that point I'd been traveling out there for 15 years, but you go and you're there for 3 days and you're gone again, or a week and you're gone again. So you never really get a proper feel for the country and to really get to know people, to have friends over there, because it is a really beautiful country. You know, it's got a fantastic kind of recent history and development and independence. And yeah, I think with all of that, it brought much more understanding. And this is somewhere that, you know, I've been visiting for a long time, but I really truly didn't kind of understand. And I think you're always learning. You'll never completely understand unless you're, you know, from Estonia. And that's the same with many countries. But to get to know people much more was really important. And a real opportunity for us and fun for the family as well at the same time. Sort of the winter temperatures and the summer sun, you know, it's wonderful. Yeah, that was a real experience for us and something really special, you know, that we'd love to repeat one day with the children.
Yes, I'm sure, I'm sure. And when you talk kind of getting a better understanding of people and the relationships and things, has it changed how you approach that part of the business in terms of, you know, with your factory? Does it give you a better understanding of it, or...?
There's always that risk that, you know, if your manufacturing is further away from you in a different country, because, you know, years ago, our manufacturing was in Oldham in the north of the UK. So you literally, I started my job on the production floor. You knew, you know, most of the people, you knew their families, you knew how they were linked to each other, because inevitably there's loads of families across, you know, the workforce. And when you're at a distance, you don't have that understanding of your teams. And actually, we've just been doing a really nice piece this year about the families within our factory in Estonia now. And of course, there's loads of relatives, because somebody will come as a temporary worker, you know, they'll have a permanent place, you know, and then they'll say, oh, there's a new job. And, you know, family and friends and children, we're part of the community. So we're a relatively big employer in Estonia, in the region we're in, even though we're 140 people. So we have quite a significant impact on the kind of local economy in terms of tax payments and employment. And they're actually really good at recognizing that and working with us, sort of the government rather than kind of employees. And, you know, you recognize kind of more of your contribution, and also the activities that you do locally with engaging the schools, engaging teachers to come around, looking at skills development. But actually, there's so much that we learn from the Estonian team as well, because they're very computer literate. The education level is very good. At least 50% of our team speaks English pretty much fluently as well. There's a lot that we're learning, and it's a really good relationship in that way.
One thing that really, I think, jumps out to me about the business is that you seem to be very, very conscious about your social purpose. When I say that, I include obviously environmental, you know, things as well. Like, you know, when you're talking about being engaged in schools in Estonia and whether it's, you know, I know you're B Corp certified and various things like that. Was that always part of the business, or is that something you've brought in recent years? How's that developed?
I think it's something that I've really been focused on, as my dad was focused on it, because your own kind of local factory, you know, you're employing people, you see the impact on all of them and their families, you go through and you see the challenges that they're living through. So you're very much aware. And when you're setting up new suppliers, so, you know, we've been buying out of China, for example, for probably 40 years. But, you know, in the very early days, the conditions were not great. So before we could even start sourcing anything, we had to work with suppliers to actually reach a level of better kind of living conditions, working conditions, and make sure everything, you know, was as our customers would expect it before we could even place an order. And that was quite a difficult journey to get suppliers on. But actually, it's meant that, you know, 40 years later, we're still working with some of those suppliers because, you know, they've learned that if they do that, make these changes, you know, the employees stay longer, you know, they win other business, it makes a greater impact on others. So I think the social focus and purpose is quite innate in the business now, because also, you know, like-minded people join the business. And that's the same from the environmental point of view, you know, people who have really kind of aligned values, who want to have more impact, who want to be respected in their roles and, you know, given opportunities, because ultimately that's what we're doing, is really working together, and you can only achieve it together, all your plans, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you tell me why did it matter to you to get your B Corp certification?
Well, I think that I came across B Corp in 2016 at a sustainable brands event, and I hadn't heard of it before then. And I guess it was actually quite in its infancy anyway. And I just thought it completely aligned with our values. And it was this sort of moment where you could see the other brands that were already B Corp. And I guess at that point, you know, probably there were less than 500, I guess. And I just thought, you know, it's the focus on the social, the environment, the community, all of these things are things that we've been looking at. But there's never been a framework that we've been looking at in terms of what we report and also what we aim to achieve. What we've always focused on is doing the right thing, what we feel is the right thing, and what can make the business better, our impact better. But, you know, we probably wouldn't have used the word impact back then. It's just our ambition to do things better, basically. I sort of came across it and I thought, well, this completely aligns not only to my values, but my dad's and the rest of the businesses. And so it became a sort of guiding light that, you know, you met other B Corps, and that B Corp community, the engagement, the energy that you get, and the ambition to change things, to do things better. And it's a real learning process from others that you go, oh, you know, you learn something that someone else has done and you think, oh, will that work in our business? And, you know, could we do that? And, you know, I feel that we're not doing enough over here, but I've seen those guys doing that. And it's kind of really exciting from that point of view of just engaging with a community that's really kind of pushing things forward and making change.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so often it's that learning from your peers that's, you know, by far the most valuable thing, in that community that you create with them. What kind of sustainability standards, for example, did you have to meet?
So to become a B Corp, you actually have to complete a questionnaire, which is like over 300 questions, and you tick yes to one question and then a million more kind of pop up. So it's looking at different areas. So governance, social impact, environmental impact, community impact. And then it's looking at within that, each kind of different area has a number of sort of questions of what are you doing to support your employees? You know, are you paying living wage? What are the other benefits? You know, parental leave, for instance. So there's a lot of different questions for each different area, of which you kind of grade yourself. And then you obviously have to provide at a later stage evidence of what you're doing, you know, how you're working with suppliers, for example, and what environmental things you're doing as regards the products that you're making as well. So all of these are kind of scored, and you have to meet a minimum score of 80 points to become a B Corp. So actually, it was a really good process in actually evaluating what we were doing as well. And for me, it's also a really good way of actually translating what we're about, because I'm so aware of, like, there's so much greenwashing coming through. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is a really good way of saying, you know, these are the things we're doing. And it's also about saying, you know, there's more that we need to do. And it's talking not just about the good things you're doing, but the areas where you've got challenges as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant. And kind of related to that, I think you're involved in the Better Business Act. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I think they're very much aligned and sort of there's a lot of crossovers in terms of signatories. So there's 1,500 people that are signatories of the Better Business Act. And it's basically looking at the triple bottom line, that it's people, planet and profit, and basically lobbying Parliament for a change that all businesses should be looking at their impact, not just on profit, but also social and environmental impact as well. Because obviously, you know, we're well aware of the various case studies where, you know, either the environment or people have been kind of cast aside, essentially, in favour of profit. And, you know, you see it time and time again. And this is about lobbying Parliament for a change in that, but also generating that kind of awareness. So it would sit with directors to be responsible for that triple bottom line. So again, highly engaged businesses really looking to change what we're doing and to do things better.
Mm. And if you were to speak to, you know, a business who is looking to improve on the impact of their social purpose, you know, if they kind of said, oh, I feel like I'm doing stuff that's, you know, what feels right to me, but, you know, maybe I need to talk to others or understand, you know, where the standards are a little bit better, what would you tell them to do?
Well, it depends where they're at the journey. If they're just at the beginning, they just haven't looked at it at all. It's kind of looking at what you are doing. And then actually, you know, as you say, does it feel right or should there be more? But then actually using something like the BIA, which is the B Impact Assessment, that's a really good little tool for just looking at social impact. You can sign up. It's free to use. You know, a lot of people use it just to actually see, you know, what are you doing? But also it gives you all those things that, you know, what does good look like? It's a fairly good way of just sort of assessing yourself. But I think also, you know, another step is to engage with businesses that have done it before, because actually they're so motivated. Everyone wants to talk about it more, to share some ideas. And I find that, you know, a lot of people are just keen to share and talk through. And if you're kind of wanting to take it, you know, a step further towards B Corp or, you know, anything like that, obviously there's a lot of work to kind of look at all the various aspects of your business. We started it during the pandemic, so we're a little bit quieter than usual, as you might say. So we didn't get external help, but in hindsight, you know, there are B leaders out there and they help you. And, you know, you can just have a quick chat with these guys as well and take things from there. So I think there's plenty of help out there. It's just sort of getting started and not being afraid to kind of discuss things. And I think we all recognise that there is no perfect and nobody's got it nailed. We're all looking to make further improvements. So just starting the conversation is a great part of the journey.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think you're spot on there. There's a saying, isn't it, you know, that perfect is the enemy of progress or something like that. You know, often people are trying to be perfect and then they kind of put themselves into paralysis of, you know, trying to do everything and then not being able to do, you know, it as good as they would want to. So yeah, I think you're spot on. And I know you're just back from the US, where you were over for a couple of weeks. Can you tell me what were you doing over there?
Yeah, so I was over for 3 weeks, actually. It was one of those that if you're going to do something, I was convinced with long discussions with my husband and other family members, because obviously, you know, young children, it's quite difficult to travel for that amount of time. But actually, you know, having not been able to travel so much through the pandemic, to really kind of focus on the market. And, you know, there were a couple of events out there at the same time that I wanted to attend. So yeah, we're just starting up in the US. We've launched one of our kind of key ranges, which is called Nightlark. It's had to change its name and it will be changing in the UK from Night Owl to Nightlark, the joys of IP and name. Oh, yes. So yeah, it's evolving. The bird is evolving and it's actually coverless duvets. And so they're great because you don't have to change the covers. So there's a lot of people who love the concept of actually not having to change the covers and just putting the whole thing in the washing machine and it coming out and drying really quickly.
I've never heard of that. Is that kind of
it's a thing. Yeah, no, so we launched them in the UK, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. And yeah, I mean, now sort of we're 3,000 kind of reviews on one product range that people absolutely love it. They're onto their third, fourth, fifth. And it's also that, you know, it's a product that goes from age 3 to literally 99-year-olds. We've got reviews not from the 99-year-olds, but from, you know,
their 3-year-olds.
Or the 3-year-olds for that matter. Yeah, you're right. it's about making life easier. I mean, yeah. You know, even I love my bedding, but I hate changing the sheets. And Everybody gets into that, like, you know, with their husband or partner, they're like, who's changing the sheets? And like, who's going to go to bed first because it's going to be them?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the joy of the products is that you just put the whole thing in the washing machine. And we've just launched a range of children's designs. So we started off with some very, you know, subtle colors, and now we're getting more fun. And, you know, there's three or four children's designs, and, you know, we're actually printing the covers in our factory now so that we can go straight into the production. So it's actually really exciting, kind of new design era. I go through all these eras and now I have to learn about design, which is like many people will be listening to this and going, you can't just learn about that in sort of a week. But anyway, yeah, it's obviously about finding the people around us that do know about design. So yeah, that's the product actually. So we're launching in the US, they call them all comforters, but the great thing is, you know, that we've got something that's really different to the rest of the market, which you wouldn't expect going over to the US. You'd kind of expect them to have it all, but this is a product that we've developed ourselves. It's, you know, it's a unique filling that we have, and it's that quality standard that we're really proud of, that, you know, you wash them and wash them, but they still endure all the challenges, and people literally take them everywhere with them as well. So they're great for the RV community in the US as well.
Yes,
it's a digital kind of proposition, first of all, with our website, nightlock.com, and then growing with Amazon. It's a long burn. I'm well aware the journey in the US is, there's a lot to learn, you know, just about the states and different consumer needs across those. So it's all about kind of starting in the right places and growing it kind of bit by bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And are you live in the States already?
Yes, we are live, and we're also live with Amazon as well, and we're about to go live with one of the main retail chains as well. So yeah, just waiting on IT connections, which is the joy of sort of having a small team and having to do everything. And you know, they're amazing, our team, but IT connections are the things that generally slow business down these days.
Yeah, there's some things can only operate at a certain speed, and you just have to be patient.
I know. Absolutely. Yeah.
And how have consumers responded so far? Or is it too early to tell?
A little bit early to tell, because we kind of launched literally just sort of before Black Friday because of the IT connections. And so there's just no point sort of putting anything into it during Black Friday. So it's more building now and into the new year. But, you know, it's okay. There's a lot to do. And there's obviously, you know, our core business as well that we're running too. So it's exciting time. And, you know, it's bringing efficiencies and to the rest of the business. And yeah, that's great.
And how's it bringing efficiencies to the rest of the business?
Well, I mean, obviously, when you're operating a factory, you're always looking to kind of bring volume efficiencies. And so, you know, it helps with printings of fabrics, for instance, that you're reaching certain minimums and you can just kind of produce different sizes and longer runs, etc. And you're not changing over your machines as often. And all the production efficiencies that you're kind of been aiming at.
Yeah. I know we kind of touched briefly on design. What percentage of your time is on design work versus strategic stuff versus production stuff? Is it possible?
I'd say probably not a lot of time on design, actually, because we're sort of going step by step. We just installed our printing machine. So we've got, you know, people within the business who spend much more time on design. But it is one area where I've got opinions which I have to admit are not always right. So I have to listen to those around me, because, you know, other people, it's not about my personal choice. It's about understanding what the consumer would like. And actually, you know, we've got a great kind of cross segment within our business of lots of people, you know, with families and, you know, and all are quite highly engaged with social media, which I've got to say I'm not the best. So it's taking different people's views. And obviously, we've got proper designers working on it as well. Yeah. Lots of experience and who really know what they're doing, rather than the sort of amateurs like me.
It strikes me that you take a very collaborative approach to leadership. Do you think that's right?
Yes, it's just not my style. And actually, funny enough, it's not my dad's style to just come along so much. I think maybe he's changed, but to come along and sort of instruct somebody to do something, because I'm more of a sort of ideas person. I'm not very good at sort of the following up with people as to where things are at. You know, I'm not a structured thinker. I am more kind of, you know, the brain's going all over the place. So you realize your own weaknesses, and really you have to have people around you who are really strong at what they do, because that's where the kind of power of the business comes. And, you know, we've got really mixed kind of teams in terms of how everybody likes to work, and everybody brings something different. And, you know, you can always put yourself in that more awkward, it's not your style to do something. You can do it, but not for sustained periods. So the collaboration is key for us. It's actually one of our key values that we focus on. It's about kind of supporting each other as well. And also, you know, we collaborate not just internally, but, you know, with suppliers, long-standing relationships. That's how we work on certain innovations, you know, get first access to some innovations as well through collaboration. But from a customer point of view, we have very long-standing relationships, you know, older than I am, with some of our retail partners. So that's kind of incredible in this day and age. And that's been through collaboration and partnership and working together on innovation. And, you know, what does the consumer ultimately need, and how do we get there? Because that's what makes successful business.
Mm, yeah, for sure. And, it, you know, it's as we kind of come into, you know, a more challenging economic outlook, it's those kind of values that will stand to you, and it's those kind of businesses that will survive and thrive, you know, during more difficult times, I think. Could you tell me a little bit, obviously, you know, you're taking the expansion to the US, so you're obviously developing market there, but how are you, I suppose, protecting or insulating the business now that things are becoming more challenging? And obviously, you know, with your factory in Estonia, I'm sure the war in Ukraine will have an impact on that as well, in terms of supply chain and so on. So what kind of steps are you taking to protect the business?
It's been a heck of a roller coaster, hasn't it, the last couple of years? And you think, oh, we're over that one. Oh no, we're not. We've got 20 people off in the factory with COVID at the moment. So COVID's still here, of course. And, you know, we've got to look after the health of our employees is number one. So there's a lot of things to juggle. And we went through a period of huge growth in the pandemic. We grew 50% last year, and that brings, you know, some challenges in terms of structure and, you know, reinvestment. Actually, we've reinvested, you know, we've got a new IT system that is being developed and installed, should go live at the end of January. That's a huge project, but that's about giving us better transparency within the business. And yeah, the challenges are huge. And actually, when you've sort of been through that sort of rapid growth, a lot of what we're focused on is actually, how do we simplify things? How do we make it simpler? Obviously, you know, everybody watches their cash very closely, their finances, their stock. And it's saying, you know, looking at everything, does this really work for us as a business? And sort of really sense checking everything. And I think there's a huge number of challenges that you're always looking at. We've been through many recessions, actually. And the funny thing about duvets is you don't rush out in the good times to buy them. And it's quite a needs-based thing that you're looking at. You know, there are obviously benefits that people are investing in. So yeah, there's a huge amount. It's like, where do I start? Yeah, it's constant business challenge. And the war in Ukraine has obviously had a huge impact on our business, not necessarily on Estonia as a country, but certainly on the people, because many have got family and friends living in Ukraine. So, you know, that's been really traumatic for a number of our Estonian employees, just making sure their families are safe, literally collecting them from the border when the war broke out. And so actually, you know, we were able to sort of support with bedding as people were evacuating throughout the country and into Warsaw, for example, and providing jobs. We've got 15 of the 140 are actually from Ukraine, including, like, you know, a 17-year-old boy who came on his own. And you're providing sort of some community, because they can speak in Russian. Many Estonians still speak Russian. So, you know, there is an ability to communicate with each other and provide some stability. You know, it's not ideal, but at least it gives some focus during the day. So yeah, it's been a huge disruption. And even now, you know, it's certainly front of the mind more in Estonia, I think, than perhaps it is in the UK.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's honestly great that you are actually on the ground and you have practical things that you can do, whether it's giving bedding or giving work and things like that. I'm sure that makes a big difference to people, you know, who are just going through the most traumatic thing.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, when you hear the stories of people arriving, you know, you think, well, at least we can do a little bit. It's not a lot, but it's a little bit. And I think, you know, it's just more safe for the teams out in Estonia as well, because it's affecting everybody and perhaps brings them together closer. Yeah. So changing times.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of changing times, I suppose maybe in a little bit more of an upbeat note, can you tell me, what are you most looking forward to for the business? Because, you know, obviously you've come through tough times, but you have seen 50% growth. You know, so things are exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting because what we're seeing is more brand growth. And that's really exciting because it's about communication to the consumer about what we do and the benefits of the product, and really learning and engaging and hearing more back about what do people need, and people being much more vocal about, you know, the products that they need and where, you know, existing products might fall short. So there's a really exciting kind of piece around the brand development, you know, going international. We've got a strong business also that's grown into the Middle East. But ultimately, we love products. We love making new products. We love finding kind of new solutions and working with customers to kind of, if it's a retail partner, to find something that really works for them. You know, there's all the challenges still around how do we achieve our environmental goals? How do we reduce reliance on cotton? How do we find the next generation of filling and, you know, really move the business on and kind of our environmental impact? So we just kind of love looking at what can we do better. That's where we get our real excitement. We're really passionate about toothpaste and pillows. We really are the kind of product experts and absolute geeks. Yes. So, you know, kind of proudly a geek in that respect.
I love geeks. Actually, speaking of product development, I love the idea of your smart temperature range. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So actually, one of the main problems people have in sleeping is getting too hot and sweaty, ultimately, which is pretty grim. But, you know, the temperature fluctuates through the night. And then, you know, there's obvious points in life, perimenopause and menopause, where, you know, hot sweats can come in. And I think, you know, the great thing at the moment is obviously there's so much more dialogue about menopause and finding solutions, rather than, I think, of my or mum who basically did come across some HRT. But now it's like, well, there are solutions out there, and sleep is one of the major areas that people lose out on during perimenopause and menopause. So what this range does, and it's for anybody who's got sleep issues because of temperature, so it can be, you know, summer season, men have a completely different metabolic rate than women, so partners are like, you know, battling each other for a warmer, cooler duvet, etc. So what it's providing is it takes away excess heat when you get really hot, and then it kind of, it's a sort of phase change material, which then gives it back when you need it. And then there's the kind of moisture wicking element, because actually if moisture builds up in the microclimate again, that's when you get too hot and sweaty, kicking off covers. It's basically helping, you know, achieve much better temperature control for a better night's sleep, basically. And so, you know, we've got some really great feedback from people who are using it. I mean, you still can't sleep under 13.5 tog in the middle of summer. You've got to adapt that bit, but it really helps with better sleep. And, you know, you just don't want to be sort of having those triggers that wake you up. If, for instance, you're struggling with anxiety, that's when you wake up and you're awake for a couple of hours. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically magic, is what you're saying. It can keep you warm.
Yes, there's good science. There's good science in it. Yeah. You know, we do a lot of product testing to make sure things work. And there's a lot of user trials, which is great. I can literally, I'm surrounded by duvets everywhere. If only you could see the other side of the camera. And if this was a video instead of a podcast.
I loved that chat. That was great. I love hearing about family businesses, how they develop. I love hearing how excited you are about duvets.
I know. About going to sleep and waking up. Yeah. I am sort of very passionate about them, and being, you know, anywhere and finding nice bedding as well. It's a real joy. So just bringing better sleep to people, basically.
Yeah, actually, you're making me want to go to bed.
Well, hopefully I've not put everybody to sleep. Maybe just challenge them to think, you know, where did I buy my duvet? Anyway.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed also speaking particularly about the, you know, the social purpose and, you know, how you engage with the communities that you work with and, you know, the people on the production floor and so on. And I think a lot of people listening will have learned a lot and maybe had a few ideas popped into their head.
Yeah, well, certainly where people want to sort of, you know, discuss ideas and, you know, feedback, very open to that. And, you know, we can only learn from each other. What can we do better, basically? So that's what we're aiming to do, is always focus on how can we improve more and get that feedback from others.
Yeah, super. Brilliant. All right. Well, Claire, thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Great. And really good to speak with you today. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Industry Leaders Podcast. And don't forget that you can catch up on all our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you usually get your podcasts. That's it for this week. So from me, Sarah Hoboyle, and all of us at Mortu, take care and bye-bye.